dress packet? I haven't seen it. Do I have a good picture in it?
No, they scarred your face.
Did they? Oh, no.
Okay.
Yeah, you do okay.
This is really the best one of you, right? But
oh, yeah. That is a good picture.
When I see you this afternoon, I'm going to have you sign.
Okay. Is this yours?
Yeah,
did you do
but
this?
I'll take the time now.
Okay.
I'll see you later. What, I'm still waiting for your picture. I'm still waiting for a picture that is all you.
It's coming.
That really plumb steps. Okay,
it is coming.
Tell us.
It's called That Was Then, This Is Now. That Was Then, This Is Now. And it's a picture that I wrote. I bought the Essie Hinton novel. I got the rights to it when I was 19 years old, when I was doing another picture called Tex.
Love it.
And knew that The Outsiders was eventually going to be turned into a film, so I hopped on the Essie Hinton bandwagon, as it were, and started writing the script, which is something I had no intentions of doing. I wanted to hire a writer, and but those guys get $100,000, $200,000 for that script. I didn't have that kind of money. So I sat down in 14 days, wrote a script, and it has taken me 4 long, very hard years to get it to the screen. And I have just seen the picture. I just saw it this week. And very, very pleased with it. Very pleased. Christopher Kane, who directed The Stone Boy, directed it. So it's got a very realistic feel. Out of all 4 films, the Essie Hinton films, it is the best one. It's the most powerful one. It's very simple. Very real, and you almost feel like a voyeur sitting there watching it. And it's by far the most complex character I've ever played. So it is coming.
I was going to say, can you at least hint to us what we will be seeing of you that we have not seen before on screen? What kind of dimension or direction?
A character that is like a peacock. He's got so many colors, and so many different levels. He's laughing one minute, you know, and then he turns, he's talking to you, and pop, hits a guy and comes back talking to you. Doesn't care. Has no conscience whatsoever. And only until an hour into the picture do you realize why he is the way he is.
Sort of a sociopath.
He is a sociopath. Definitely a sociopath. He watched his parents blow each other away when he was 9 years old over in a drunken brawl over the fact that he was illegitimate. So that's scarred him for life.
Suddenly I'm flashing on your dad in Badlands, too.
It's not quite. He's got a lot more levels in that character. That character didn't really have a sense of humor. And this character's the whole half of the first hour of the picture, he's laughing and having a good time and doing things that just boggle the mind. Why does he do the thing? And then when he tells his story about why he is the way he is, it just blossoms. So that's a real showcase.
It's a remarkable career in that it has consisted of so many pictures where you've gotten great notices, and yet you've always been just a part of a bigger piece.
Right.
And everybody's kind of waiting.
Right,
I think.
Right. Wait no more.
Yeah.
Wait no more.
What was the name of that again?
That Was Then, This Is Now.
And, how old are you?
I just turned 23, just last week.
It occurs to me that if someone were making a movie and wanted to cast father and son, so they look like father and son.
Right.
Like there would only be one logical choice.
Right, yeah, we get those all the time.
Any interest in working with father?
You know, we did a picture together, we did a television film together. And I think that's really where I'm going to draw the line on that. The comparisons have been very strong, and one of the reasons why I chose to use my own name, the family name, was because I wanted to break away from the comparisons. I wanted to break away from the association. And so working with him, I think, would only cement that even further. So I want to give it some time. I want to give it some time. Maybe we'll do Subject Was Roses in 4 or 5 years.
Yeah,
maybe if he can age down like Hoffman did for Salesman, we might be able to do something like that. But I'm still a little young to play that.
What's it like to play a college kid who's always frustrated?
It was wonderful. I mean, the character, you know, I when I read the script, I never really pictured myself as that character in the first read-through. Well, you know, I identify with the other characters. Didn't even think of that character. So I went in and I talked with Joel Schumacher, and he says, what do you think about Kerbo? And I laughed. I was, this guy's a Woody Allen type. He's a nerd. What are you saying? You know, what are you saying? I don't. I can't relate to that. So he says, "Well, I want to cast against type. I want the audience to think that maybe he is going to get the girl. I want there to be some doubt in the back of their minds as to what's going to hurt, or some, you know, unknowing, you know, in the back of their minds." So he says, "Why don't we read it?" So we read it together. It was boom, 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 boom. And he was wonderful. And it just worked. And he says, "You are Kerbo." So I said, "Okay, I'll see you on the set." And I was on the set doing that role.
It's a great scene when you get the Polaroid.
Oh, it's fun. That's so fun. That mountain sequence is hysterical. We shot that in right here in California, in Lake Tahoe. Very cool. Very cool.
There's a physicality to some of that. You have a certain tendency to gesture. I've seen you do it in some other pictures too.
Right.
It's almost like a little signature. Is that anything you're ever conscious of? Or no. Kind of a little jubilation sort of fist. You even see it coming out of the car when you're driving away.
Yes, the fist comes out. Yeah.
Physical mannerisms are something we don't see that much of anymore from many actors.
This is true.
They seem to have that kind
this
of...
This is true. I am conscious of how I use my body, but not in a way that makes me self-conscious as an actor. I think body movement, if you can say things with a look or with your body, then you don't have to use words, and it's a visual medium. So you know, the less you say, the better. You never hear somebody saying, "Well, I heard a good movie." They saw a good movie.
Could we stay with that in terms of Breakfast Club too? A wonderful dance sequence.
That was fun.
Was that intimidating for you in advance? I mean, just considering it coming up that you were going to do it.
Well, you know, we didn't really know what we were going to do, and John Hughes said, "What would you like to do? You know, I want to show Andy breaking out. You know, all that frustration, all just." And he gets high, and he just breaks out of that mold that he's been in, that's been created for him. And he said, "What do you want to do?" I said, "Stay here." So I went upstairs on the balcony. I took all my clothes off, got down in my underwear, and I just screamed and yelled, running around. And he says, "Well, I think that's a little extreme." And so I came back, put my clothes back on, and I said, "Well, what do you think?" He says, "Same thing, but keep your clothes on." So that's eventually what it ended up being, just this frustrating dance, this breakout, you know, as it were. Yes. Yes. So it was a lot of fun.
But it ain't easy. You've got to be in good shape. I mean, you've got to have the body for it.
They had me working out to look like a wrestler. I worked out for about 8 weeks with a personal trainer here in L.A. And then when we got to the hotel in Chicago, we had a weight room there. And I was benching, for my size, it was good for me. I was benching 210, 215. And I was weighing 145, 140. So that was good for me to be putting up that much. Did you see me in this movie last night? I'm a slob. And all three movies, you can progressively see me getting in worse and worse shape. In Breakfast Club, I'm like, you know, very robust and very, you know, working out the jock. And that was then, you know, I'm lean, but you can see towards the end of the picture, falling apart. And by the time I got to, I had one day off between That Was Then and St. Elmo's Fire. I had Sunday. I drove to St. Paul, so when I drove back, it took me Friday and Saturday to drive back, and then I had Sunday to rest. Monday I reported for rehearsal, so I was wiped. I had no interest in working out, had no interest in running, anything. I just wanted to do this movie and rest. And it turned out it was a very physical role. The bike riding, the running in the snow. I was drenched through a lot of it. A lot of fun. We had a blast on this movie. And I think every picture that I do, I like to have a lot of laughs on. I like to feel very comfortable in front of the crew, in front of the cast, because it's the same. It's like being on stage, because that's your audience. And you don't necessarily play to them. You're playing to the camera. But you have to feel comfortable in front of them, so you don't, so you're not self-conscious. When you're self-conscious, it shows in your work. And
self-consciousness, you know, is something I have never noticed in your work.
I'm not afraid of the camera, though. I'm not afraid of the camera. People who are afraid of the camera are self-conscious because they. How you doing, Richard? Good to see you, man. How are you? They are. constantly aware of this image that they have of themselves. So I don't have an image of myself other than I love to have a good time. You know, I'm not that I'm a partying type of guy, but I really enjoy having a lot of laughs. I enjoy having a good time, and life is too short not to. Life is too short not to enjoy what you do. And I love acting. I love being involved in filmmaking. You know, I want to direct. I want to write. I want to make movies and make it fun for everyone. You know, run a clean set, and just, you know, have a wonderful time, because, and that's what it's all about. Really, just enjoying why we're here.
Have all of these ambitions always been there, or have they gradually accreted over the years?
When I was 7 years old, I submitted a story to Night Gallery, written on that kind of paper, lined paper, in pen. So I have always been very, very ambitious and very film-oriented. I'd read scripts a lot of times instead of books. It was just very accessible to me.
How do you enjoy the writing?
It's wonderful. I have a computer, so it's very easy. You know, no, it's not. It's not easy, but it's made my life a lot more simple. You don't have to put the paper in. I put my disc in, and boom, boom, boom. I have a compact portable, and it's changed my life. I've written 3 scripts this year, so it's allowed me to be a lot more prolific than usual.
What does this picture tell you about today's college graduates as opposed to maybe any picture you've seen thus far?
Well, I really have nothing in common with any of these characters, which is strange. And it's not to say that I can't relate to them. I can relate to their pain. I mean, these guys are kind of losers. They all lose in the end, and the only thing that they have in the end ultimately is their friendship, which is what the movie's about. But we all lose. We all don't come out on top in the end of the film. It's very interesting, you know, that a studio would make a picture that, you know, doesn't have your hero. We're all anti-heroes, as it were. I bring a certain amount of myself into each character that I play, so I can relate to that guy on that level. But I don't really have anything in common with him. I'm not a law student. I'm not working in a restaurant. I'm not obsessed with a woman.
There's nothing about you that seems lost.
No.
That's for sure. However, what in your life maybe hasn't come to fruition the way you would have liked it to? Hasn't happened the way you would have liked?
Well, expect nothing and be pleasantly surprised. It's kind of like my motto. I think when you set expectations of yourself and you don't reach that goal, it's devastating. It's crippling. And when you expect nothing, you are always surprised, and you're always excited, and you're always one. You know, you're always thinking, what's gonna happen today? You know, and that's kind of like the way I like to live. When I write a script, I would love to see it come to the screen, and my ambition will see it through. It took 4 years to get one thing to the screen. Maybe the next time it'll take 3, and then after that 2, and then after that I'll write a script and the next week I'll sell it. So it's a very exciting time right now.
Does that make you both patient and impatient?
Yes.
How you handle it?
Yes, exactly. I am excessive compulsive. When I write, I don't sleep, I don't eat, I don't bathe, I write.
Writing is going on.
Yes. Yeah, I don't answer the phone, anything. I get when I'm working, I'm working, and I love to work. But I'm learning patience. I'm learning patience.
Is it because of the friends around you, or part of your own sense of being mentally healthy to learn patience?
I think it's a combination of the two. Yeah. My friends aren't necessarily as patient as one should be. That's okay. That's them.
Who are your friends? Where do you live? Who do you
I've just bought a condominium in Malibu. I know how that makes me sound now. No, I just bought a wonderful condominium. I started looking for homes, and they're just so expensive. And this is great. It's got a 24-hour security guard, and I can leave. I can go away on location for 3 months, and I don't have to worry about getting ripped off or the place burns down. Somebody's going to put the fire out. You know. So I just moved into this wonderful place. I was living in a one-room apartment in Santa Monica for a little while, and it just wasn't big enough anymore. I couldn't, you know, it wasn't my place. And now I have a place. I have a solid home base now, which is very important to me.
Are all your friends in the movie business, or
primarily? Yeah. Yeah. And one would think that maybe that's a little limiting, but I don't really see it that way. The people that I surround myself with are very creative people, and we feed off of each other, and you know, and we don't always just talk about films, we talk about other things as well, and well, that's how I'm able to write.
How many people in this cast would you consider amongst your closer friends or social?
Rob, he lives out there as well. Demi is a very close friend. Judd. And I was friends with Judd and Allie before we did the picture, because of Breakfast Club. So yeah, these friendships are very strong.
Was there ever a moment when you thought a picture like Breakfast Club just would not find an audience?
Sure. Studio thought so too. They didn't know who the hell to market it to. They were like, this picture, it's good. What do we do with it? You know, what happens now? And they kind of put it out there and saw what it would do and saw, wow, we've got a hit. Wow, slapping each other on the back. Great, didn't we do good?
We
knew it all. You know, John Hughes is sitting back there like this. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's such a closely observed film. I mean, is it almost like a hands-on kind of contact he makes with you all the time?
Yeah.
With his cast?
Yeah. Yeah, he's...
But at the same time, miles of film.
I mean, he shot... No, I didn't say this here. He shot 2,000 feet, two 1,000-foot magazines of me just burping. I couldn't burp on cue. So he just let it roll, and he's rolling on the ground laughing, and it was, you know, he spent thousands of dollars for his own enjoyment. So, and it was a wonderful working relationship. We had a lot of laughs on that picture, a lot of laughs on St. Elmo's.
Do you think the St. Elmo's fire image gets across in this film as a writer? When we have a bar called St. Elmo's Fire, we have a fire in the St. Elmo's dining room.
She started to do Love Boat, and I don't know if she was still on it, or what happened with it. You know, she was real. I don't really know what she's doing actually.
And then what was
the difference for me? I think that I'm moving on a slower track. You know, I didn't have that big push and hey. I'm the new star of this and that and either. And I think being the underdog has never hurt me. And
you weren't a poster either.
No, I wasn't a poster, and I'm an actress. And I'm looking to do good roles and to grow all the time, and also I don't know, I mean, maybe you need to just ask me some more specifically. I'm here and I don't know how. No.
Well, coming off of a picture like that, is it a question then of you knocking on doors, of people coming to you, of you're having to lay back and be selective?
Well, it's a.
You must have felt like you.
I think that I came out of Blame on Rio very well. You know, I had good reviews, that, you know, pushed me a little further to get a little better role, you know. good work breeds good work. You know, you get better opportunities. And
were you disappointed with what happened in those small affairs? I like that picture. It didn't seem to go as far as I thought it would go, the box office.
For me, I was just, you know, I started to have my doubts that it was going to be a good film, and I was surprised it was as good as it was. And I think they had a hard time marketing it. You know, it's a very hard film.
You got to sing.
I didn't do the singing.
Really?
No.
It was good dubbing then.
Thanks. But I...
Where did they find another voice like that?
Well, I never thought she sounded like me, which is funny, except on one song.
She sounded a bit higher.
Yeah. But, no, because, you know, I just took it for what it was. And it was a good film for me.
It was a good film for the audience. Yeah, I think so.
That's nice to hear.
It was nice to receive.
It's really nice to hear.
I find it pretty big noise. From what I remember of No Small Affair, I think it's amazing. What do you mean by that?
Oh, it's so funny. I mean, I'm if I get out of my sweatpants, we're lucky, okay?
the your role in St. Elmo's Fire, it occurs to me that there must have been moments, particularly with your comments about fast-tracking it and those things earlier, there must have been times that your role in St. Elmo's Fire would have terrified you.
At that point in my life, I was really, I really trusted myself and where, I mean, it didn't terrify me as a person. Jules is a character, she's a person that I know well, but she's not me. And, but I do understand the little girl that she is. And I think we all have that little person. And yeah, there is that element of terror. And it was a terror that I was grateful that I didn't have to be that way.
She's the female Billy in many ways in this film.
Yeah.
Her energy is constantly being exploded away from her stability.
I think that's why. That she chooses to reach out to someone who is as sleazy and is at such a as at an end is at an equal bottom to reach out to say, hey, I need help. But I think that, you know, it's interesting because he's not there yet. She's like starting to take a look at what's going on with her to slightly break out of the denial. I think she was a lot sicker than maybe the ending of her. I mean, a lot of other people have been mentioning how quickly she seemed to recover. You know, and I don't know if that was something that.
I asked this question earlier, but I'm so interested. Why the women bore no relationship to Billy's wife? It was like she was a complete stranger.
That is interesting.
Because I don't think modern women necessarily would take that route. I mean, they would have had some kind of relationship.
You're very right about that. I can't disagree with you. It's a good point, and I noticed it last night.
You know, just Bobby Kennedy, that's it. Don't change it. But I lost that argument. I always lose my arguments. I thought Alex would have a shaved head. No, I'm kidding.
Do you perceive the young people that are being portrayed in the film as being very conservative now and very career-oriented as opposed to ideals and all of the things that kids seem to have at that age? Instead, it's all three-piece suits and conservative politics.
Well, certainly in this section of life, at the age level these characters are at, in the immediate circumstance that they are all in, the American dream has a very concrete sense to it, as opposed to an abstract sense. certainly a character like Alec Newberry, has a very concrete understanding of the American dream, which is amazing. What it takes is a lot of non-thought that guises itself as thought to reach that type of an ontology where you can see the world this way. For some reason, the two cars, the garage, the picket fence, the two dogs, 2.5 kids, the wife, house in Georgetown, 3 floors, gonna have maid's quarters up on the third floor. It's all understandable, and it equals happiness, maybe. Well, no doubt the dude is heading for a serious crisis at 35, you know.
Yeah.
Ah! You know, but...
it's going to be an Esquire article.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Whatever happened to him. Well, the dude's in Bellevue now. He's having a hard time. Now, these people are reasonably success-oriented. You know, and they take themselves pretty seriously. I mean, the like writer guy, he wants to write on the meaning of life. He doesn't want to come and interview actors. He wants to write about the meaning of life by Kevin Dillon. That's where you're starting? You know, wasn't that what Dickens was trying to do when he wrote 17 novels? But certainly this group of people is very success-oriented. More conservative, no doubt affected by the present administration, as all colleges are affected by that. You know, if we had like Pat Paulson as the president, Cinema Sphere would be a different movie. Everyone would be like wearing those goofy ears, you know, or something like that. We have Reagan, so the kids on campuses are a little more conservative, a little more success-oriented. Feel they have more of an understanding of what the American dream is all about. Alec Newberry epitomizes an ideology which is that it's not important what the argument is about. It's important that you win the argument. It's a different way of looking at life.
Right.
It's very different. And then you pay a tremendous price when you think that way in life, because what happens is you end up seeing friends as adversaries, because you see yourself in a competition for everything. Competition for girls, competition for fame, competition for money, competition for best coat of paint on your doorstep. I mean, it'll extend to everything. Who's got the best dog? And we see this around us. A lot of people think that way, which is very depressing, ultimately.
Yeah, and you're bringing up speculation we've had before, that the bond among these friends may be one more of exploitation than it is of genuine affection.
I think it's up to the individual viewer who watches it. I saw the film for the first time, you know, and I'm really disappointed in my own work, as usual, so it's hard for me to see the whole film. I'm just trying to remember back to the script. I can't, I watch myself, I'm like, thank God there's other actors in the movie. You know? Yeah, get them out of there. Okay, now I can watch the movie. You know, I don't like watching myself that much. I'm a little disappointed with myself as an actor. I think I have a lot to learn, and I can grow a lot. Hopefully we'll get more jobs to get better. So when I watch the film, I'm trying to think more about what the film is than what I saw. So I was like, yeah, I'm screaming and sweating a lot. I have no nails. So what was the question? Bless you, I'm going
to
try and answer.
Well, you were starting to say that the film seems to be kind of like a Rorschach blot. You can make of it what you will about what it is that keeps these people together.
Yeah, I mean, are they... I was a little bit sad at the end of the movie. The people there, you know what I mean? It was sad. It was sad, the relationships, they didn't seem to work out. You knew Billy, it seemed like... It's so sad when he says, I'll call, and she says, you won't. It's like, he won't. Oh, sorry.
If you subtract the music, you don't have the feeling that they're even there together.
Interesting. See, I got a sense of it. It left me a little blue. Not like actor seeing what's up on screen, but the movie just was like, these guys are just, they're missing it. They have so much there, and they're just like...
Did you ever see Steve Tesich's Four Friends?
No, I didn't.
Although it covers more of a span of time, there's a tone about it.
I want to see that movie because someone else mentioned that as well. I haven't seen it.
It's interesting, though, because in Breakfast Club, even though, like you felt, I even felt that your character, the Chief Loser, was going to be okay.